Welcome to another episode of the Oncology on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Tim Cortes. Today's episode of Oncology on the Go was created in partnership with KidneyCan. KidneyCan is a nonprofit organization with a mission to accelerate cures for kidney cancer through education, advocacy, and research funding. Cancer Network's Gina Morrow spoke with Dr. Eric Jonasch of the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center about some of the recent missions and goals of the Kidney Cancer Research Consortium. Jonasch spoke about the strong focus on immune therapy and the use of checkpoint blocking antibodies like nivolumab and pembrolizumab in recent kidney cancer trials. He also touched on the recent effort to incorporate biopsies into treatment more frequently.
First off, let's talk about, of course, the Kidney Cancer Research Consortium. I'd love to hear from you. How would you define the mission and the goals of the consortium, and what is your role with it?
The question really is, what are the missions and goals of the Kidney Cancer Research Consortium, and what is my role? So I'm the principal investigator of this effort, and it's a DOD-funded grant whose mission really is to improve the treatment of patients with renal cell carcinoma. And we're achieving this through developing a network of clinical trial centers across the country who have expertise both from the development as well as from the execution perspective. And what we want to do is we want to really do the clinical trials that industry wouldn't do otherwise, and also do the trials that really are going to allow us to gain knowledge faster than other trials. And we do this by, number one, using novel agents, number two, using more efficient and innovative clinical trial designs, and number three, by incorporating correlative studies, including biopsies and various other circulating biomarker analyses that allow us to really get smarter faster when we do perform these studies. And lastly, then, the tissue that we acquire from these patients, we have some really cutting edge technologies that allow us to sort of look at the tumor in ways that we've never been able to look at before, that allow us to sort of see what are the cancer cells doing relative to the immune cells, and are the tumor cells happier and unhappy with regards to the treatments we're providing? How are the immune cells doing? And this just gets us closer to being able to come up with more refined ways of improving our treatments.
If you could touch on, what are some of the maybe most successful or interesting clinical trials that have come out of the consortium? And if you want to touch upon any of the novel agents that are being explored as well, that could be great.
Right. And so some of the one of the questions really is, what are the novel agents that we're using, and what is the overall strategy that we're applying here? So first of all, you know, we know that the immune system is really important in the treatment of patients with renal cell carcinoma, and stimulating the immune system is super important. Having said that, and we have demonstrated that we have achieved success with that kind of a strategy, but the success is not universal, and we need to do better. So a lot of the trials that we have running or have now completed are taking sort of a backbone of immune therapy that we use. These are checkpoint blocking antibodies, for example, nivolumab or pembrolizumab, or CTLA-4 blocking agents like ipilimumab, and then adding additional agents that may be tweaking the way the immune cells are reacting then to the tumor cells. We know, for example, that there are deficiencies sometimes in the way the immune cells react because the tumors are kind of throwing things at them that don't make them work as well. And so, for example, there was a study that was run led by Katie Beckerman using an A2A receptor inhibitor, which basically blocks the ill effects of adenosine on the immune cells. So it's a trial where we used a standard backbone of ipilimumab, nivolumab, and added this A2A receptor inhibitor called ciforadenant. So that's an example. Another study that's being led by Tian Zhang at UT Southwestern looks at the addition of actually a cholesterol-modifying agent called evolocumab, which changes how some of the Proteins that make the cancer cells visible to the immune cells are processed on the surface of the cell. So we're looking at a combination of evolocumab plus nivolumab, which is a PD-1 blocking agent. So these are just two examples of trials that are being led by investigators in the consortium that are helping us to sort of move things forward. And other things we're doing as well is, you know, doing the therapy side of things is important, but then doing the better measurement side of things is also important. And I had talked before about using some innovative ways of looking at the tissues, but there's also circulating biomarkers, for example, that we can look at. And we could look at circulating tumor DNA. We can look at other factors and being able to measure sooner and better whether or not we're making an advance in the treatment of patients is another thing that, you know, patients really want. A lot of my patients say, "Why am I waiting 3 months for the scans? Can't you tell me sooner whether this is working or not working?" And these are the sorts of things that we really need for our patients, and we are incorporating those. And for example, Scott Hawk at Vanderbilt is in a leader, and Matt Friedman at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute are leading efforts to really create these biomarker platforms within the KCRC.
I want to definitely go a little bit more in depth with that and focusing more so like on the biopsy side of it. So can you discuss the consortium's efforts on biopsies? What are the specific inroads that have been made and what impact do they have on the kidney cancer landscape?
Yeah, so the question really is what are we doing with regards to biopsies in our clinical trials? Most of the clinical trials that we are launching, we're trying to incorporate the use of biopsies mainly on treatment. We will have at the baseline some biopsies as well that, you know, will have been acquired in the course of the patient's care. And what we want to look at is we want to look at how does the tumor microenvironment change as a function of the therapy we're giving? So you have a pre-biopsy, you have a post-biopsy, and see how does it change? And by looking at these changes, we're going to be able to understand in those individuals who are responding, what is it, what are the characteristics of how the cancer cell is interacting with the immune cells? And conversely, that in individuals who aren't responding, how does that microenvironment look? And by sort of looking at what's good and what's not good with regards to a response at a tissue level, we can then generate hypotheses as to, well, here's why the response isn't occurring. It's no longer just like, well, you know, shrug shoulders, we don't know. It's, well, there might be something here. And by understanding that, we can then postulate that new types of treatments might be needed for those sorts of individuals. And so that's what we're trying to do. This is how, you know, having what I would call like a data-rich and a knowledge-rich set of trials allows us to make multiple observations within a smaller data set of patients, which is more efficient. It's better for patients. Fewer patients have to be tested, and we gain knowledge faster.
And do you notice, are there different either results or processes for whether you're collecting plasma versus urine versus serum? Does anything like that either lead to different results or just a different change in protocol or anything like that?
We at this point in time wouldn't be able to answer that question yet, but part of what, you know, what hopefully we can have this interview in 3 to 5 years. And at that point in time, we will have the tissues acquired from these various sources and we'll be able to answer that question. I think from a patient perspective, the easiest thing, the best thing would be for us to be able to look at something like urine because it's super easy. You know, blood's a little bit harder. Biopsies are even harder. But you know, there's other areas, for example, what we would call quality of life measures, which Naomi Haas and others in the consortium are also very interested in and leading. And for example, using wearables can be a really important thing. And just sort of on a personal note, you know, I got COVID 2 weeks ago and I was fine. But what was crazy was that my watch, my Apple Watch, told me that my resting heart rate went up by 10 beats per minute from the day when I started feeling unwell to the day that I turned negative on my test. And so this is just a little example of how are, what's happening to, well, patients in terms of their physiology as a function of therapy and as a function of the disease. There's an incredible untapped resources here. And this is the sort of thing as well, and it sort of turns to, quality of life as well as things that we don't even sort of notice necessarily on our own that we can capture and gather, which will help us really improve the quality of life of patients with therapy.
That was great. Thank you very much. We would love for you to highlight the integration of companion correlative studies with clinical trials as it relates to the consortium. Can you provide any examples of these, and why is this type of integration important?
Yeah, so the question is really, how do we integrate companion correlative studies into the consortium studies? And an example, I discussed a little bit before, was the Scott Hawk and Matt Freeman are two investigators who really are interested in looking at circulating factors in individuals with advanced renal cell carcinoma. And they've gotten funding, independent funding, to perform these types of analyses. And so what we're doing now is we have a clinical trial, and we then are writing these trials, knowing that Scott has this funding. We're writing the clinical trial in a way that we're collecting samples basically on behalf of his laboratory research study in the clinical trial. And so this allows us to integrate that. Another example is I have a DOD-funded clinical trial that I'm looking at a novel radiation therapy. It's basically an antibody tagged with radiation, lutetium girentuximab, together with immunotherapy. And what we're doing is we're piloting some novel imaging studies. So there is a particular PET called FARAG that can look at the activation of immune cells in the tumor microenvironment. And we're treating with these particular agents on this trial, and we're then following up with FARAG PET imaging at baseline and after treatment. And the idea is that we want to see whether or not, by using these different treatments, are we making the immune microenvironment so-called more hot? Do we actually see more immune cells in the tumor microenvironment using non-invasive imaging? And so this is integrated into this trial. And if this works, if this is useful, we would, see that in the responders. We would see that we are going to have an increased PET uptake. In the non-responders, we're not seeing an increased PET uptake. And this is just another way of us being able to, earlier on and in a less invasive manner, be able to understand whether or not we're getting where we need to with our treatment.
Excellent points. Thank you. Is there anything else from the consortium? Any other efforts that you would like to highlight?
So one of the other things that we really want to do with the consortium is, at this point in time, the consortium is in seven academic institutions around the country. These are ivory tower type of places where it's not sometimes easy for patients to get into. But what we really want to do is we want to be able to democratize this in a way that we can help the broader kidney cancer community. And one of the ways that we're doing this is we're also working together with the VA hospital system to understand where are the patients being treated at the VA hospitals with renal cell carcinoma, so we can then begin to partner with them to be able to use the infrastructure that we've created through the consortium to be able to then conduct studies through the VA system. And this is a way that we hope to then be able to use what we've learned, because just creating the infrastructure is sort of like, I don't know, it's like a giant construction project. It's like building a road and a bridge over a river, and how do you do this? And once you've done it once, you get a little smarter and you're able to build the second bridge a little bit faster. So I see this being possible through the VA system. The other thing that we really need to focus on, and we are working on developing partnerships to achieve this, is that there's different types of kidney cancer, and some of these kidney cancers affect underserved populations or identifiable populations that are within the broader community. And working on coming up with treatments for these rarer kidney cancers, for example, medullary renal cell carcinoma, which arises mainly in athletes who have sickle trait. And this is often, you see this in, for example, in the veteran population, or in the so these are populations that are underserved and need to be met. The last thing is that data. We're learning more and more, and we are sort of inundated with information about AI, and AI is great. Well, yeah, it is done right. And one of the opportunities we have here is, again, having these seven institutions where we have massive amounts of data on thousands and thousands of patients with renal cell carcinoma that have been treated on study or off study, being able to integrate all of this information. There's undoubtedly a treasure trove of data in there. And by using large language models and by integrating this, I think we will be able to move forward and learn things that we, wouldn't even have known that we should be asking by looking at trends within these data sets.
This was wonderful. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that I did not ask you, but you want to make sure that people know about?
No, but I would just say that, once again, this is a part number one. Just through KidneyCan and the efforts of KidneyCan, they have been leaders in working with Congress to obtain funding for kidney cancer research, and for that we're incredibly grateful. This program as a result of that. And I think it's an example also of how building teams and working together as a team nationally, we can do more than we can individually. And this is really, I think, a testament, the consortium's a testament to that. And what the DoD KCRP program has done has brought together individuals in a way that we've never been able to do before, and we're seeing the results, and it's so exciting. And I think the next 10 years are going to be amazing in terms of how we're going to be able to change the lives of patients with renal cell carcinoma.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere podcasts are available. Or you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcasts. The Oncology on the Go podcast is the official podcast of cancernetwork.com, the home of the Journal of Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at cancernetwork without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at cancernetwork.